Throughout history, our image and acceptance of witches has changed very little. In fact, our perception is almost as identical now as to how it was almost 1,000 years ago. The image of the malevolent old hag casting evil spells and selling her soul to the devil is as common in our society now as it ever has been. And the stereotypical black-cloaked, repulsive and macabre wretch upon a broom is still the go-to mental image for most of us. But how much truth are there to the legend of witches? Are the stories we've inherited over the years of the Northern European witches based on any kind of historical fact? Or are they simply folk tales and Halloween horror stories that were embraced by the New World with the dawn of the United States? So on this very dark and eerie Halloween night, turn down the lights and light a candle or two as we explore some lore and true legends of witches. Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live. This is lifted from the book of Exodus, verse 22, chapter 18. It is this sentence alone, 8 simple printed words which led to the deaths of between 35,000 and 100,000 people accused of witchcraft during the burning times. It was also the justification for the publishing of the Malleus Maleficarum, or the Hammer of Witches, by Heinrich Kramer in 1487, which gave endorsement and detailed theory to the practice of extermination of all witches as heretics. Thou shalt not suffer a witch to live is now considered by many to be a mistranslation of the original Hebrew and not to refer to witches at all. However, there is no way to be clear due to the dialect vanishing through the sands of time. One thing is certain, however, and that is a lot of the practices involved with witchcraft were pagan in origin, with many pagan festivals and rituals either being commandeered or replaced by a Christian element or version. It's certainly no secret that Christians of the Middle Ages considered witchcraft the most heinous crime against God, and the standard viewpoint was that it was worse than committing the act of murder. So we now know, thanks to high-profile happenings such as the Salem Witch Trials of 1692 and the Pendle Hill Witch Trials of 1612, that many accused of witchcraft were the subject of nasty games of revenge, false accusation, and baseless assumptions of guilt with no supportive facts. But it wasn't until 1735 and the introduction of the Witchcraft Act in the United Kingdom that it became a criminal offence to wrongly accuse others of witchery or make an accusation without factual evidence. The Black Mountains Witch. As someone who hails from Wales, I wanted to include a Welsh legend in this episode. As it turns out, and even though Wales is the land of folklore and legend, it was somewhat difficult to find something suitable for this subject, as, over the last 1,500 years, there have only been 5 instances of an accused witch in Wales being burned alive at the stake. But while trawling through the history books and researching, I came across the most peculiar tale of Elian Lloyd, the witch from the Black Mountains. It's 1792, and the burning times have all but come to an end across Europe, and we are about to enter the Industrial Age. Elian Lloyd, her husband Thomas, and 3 children live in a small cottage at the end of the village in Llangos, Powys. They are a deeply religious family, as many families were back then, and as the dark and cold months of winter set in, the Lloyd's youngest child, 11-month-old Gwyneth, becomes seriously ill. As there is no doctor in the village, and despite the Lloyd's best efforts, sadly their baby passes away. Whilst they both grieve, Elian takes the tragedy particularly badly and withdraws into herself, becoming non-communicative towards Thomas, and as the days pass, Elian's despair only deepens. Not knowing what to do or how he can help, Thomas invites the Reverend John Davis to visit Elian in the hope that comforting words and advice can provide solace. The visit has little positive effect, though, and Elian's darkening despair now starts to affect the children, and Thomas grows increasingly worried for the fate of his family. On the 19th day of Elian's despair, Thomas enters the house and witnesses Elian casting an incarnation of an unknown language. Thomas grabs Elian and tries to silence her, but she pushes him towards the fireplace. Torn between accusing his wife of witchcraft and abandoning her for fear of his children, Thomas waits until late that night when Elian is asleep and takes the children, fearing Elian's despair has consumed her and that she has now signed the devil's book. The legend continues that when she awoke, Elian ran out of the house and into the forest screaming, "Vumlentin, Vumlentin Bach, my children, my children." These blood-curdling shrieks are still carried on the Black Mountain today when the fog is down. Between 1800 and 1870, no fewer than 5 children have disappeared without a trace on the Black Mountains. These are thought to be at the hands of Gwarwch Eribyn, or the Hag of the Mist, as she has become to known in the years since she came to dwell in the mountains. The most well-known incident came in 1854, when young brother and sister Margaret and Ivor Maddox were collecting blackberry fruits on the mountains, and they came across a small copse. Stood amongst the trees was a tall, grotesque old woman, wearing a dark brown woolen shawl and hood, whose arms, neck and legs were covered in thick black hair. She asked the children if she might share some of their fruit with her. As young Ivor approaches her with the fruit, the old hag opened her shawl, revealing a thick hair all over her body, and drew the boy into her, wrapping the shawl around him. Margaret ran, screaming, back to the village and told her father and uncle what had happened. But when they got back to the small wood, they discovered the body of Ivor drowned in a nearby stream. Margaret's story wasn't believed, and as the older sister, she was blamed for the death of the boy. Margaret, however, continued to tell the same story until she herself drew her last breath many years later. Eileen is thought to take away any children, should they be foolish enough to stray onto the mountains alone, so that others may suffer the same loss that she herself once did. For those of you out there confident that an old woman alone won't scare you, the local legend also has it that Eileen has acquired a protector, appointed by the devil himself in the form of the Cyhyraeth, or a wraith with blood and flesh hanging from its bones. It is said to let out a chilling shriek before delivering your impending death. What are your thoughts on the fate of Eileen Lloyd? Would you dare go onto the Black Mountains alone? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Get in touch. Can witches actually fly? It's no secret fact that witches, with the aid of a broomstick, legend says, retain the ability to fly. And whilst this can be easily explained as magic, is there any element of this that is grounded in reality? Where did this lore come from? The German physician Johann Hartlieb first documented in 1456 the full and detailed instruction for the creation of witches' flying ointment. The element of flying has fallen by the wayside of stories in recent years, but it was a necessity for a witch to travel to a witch's Shabbat or Sabbath, and without this ability, this would have proved very difficult. Hartlieb was a physician who took a particular interest in tonics, herbology and natural recipes, particularly with a direct link to witchcraft. The ingredients of a witch's flying ointment Hartlieb proposed was wolf's bane, smalling, hemlock, nightshade, chinquefoil and the fat and flesh of an unbaptized child. The measurements would need to be exact, as some of these elements were highly poisonous. These would then be ground to a flying slurry. Some witches would apply all over their naked bodies, others specifically to their vaginal areas, also known as intercourse with the devil. So how does the ointment actually make a witch fly? The ingredients in the exact measurements act as a strong hallucinogen. So whilst the lore is that witches physically flew on broomsticks, the actual facts are likely to be closer to hallucinating that they were actually flying. The Bell Witch. It's easy to be sceptical when it comes to certain stories of real-life hauntings. Some are almost too good to be true, and some are too ridiculous to accept. But the story of the Bell Witch is different. There are multiple witnesses corroborating the story, and even historical documentation, and a visit from a real-life US president. According to legend, way back in the summer of 1817, in the town of Adams, Tennessee, something terrible befell the Bell family. It all started one evening when Patriarch John Bell was walking through the grounds of his farm. It was during this walk that John saw something strange in the cornfield. It was what he would later describe as a dog with a rabbit's head. He shot at the strange animal a number of times and then joined his family inside. Later that night, the mysterious sounds of knocking and rattling chains was heard by the whole family. Each preceding night, it became louder and louder and was eventually joined by the sound of a strange voice chanting hymns. The Bell children then began hearing rats gnawing at their bedposts, but the horrors were only just beginning. For over a year, John was so afraid of being called crazy that he told his family to hide what they'd seen and heard. But yet he decided to confide in his best friend, James Johnson, after his younger daughter Betsy woke up with handprints and welts on her face. To investigate his friend's claims, James stayed in the Bell House one night, ultimately confirming that he heard unusual sounds as well. Soon enough, all sorts of people were visiting the house to try to do the same. Even a young Andrew Jackson turned up when he was still in the military. But once he arrived at the farm, the wheels of his carriage weirdly became locked. According to lore, the spirit haunting the Bell family claimed to be a former neighbour named Kate Batts, and she believed John treated her unfairly on a land deal. Not only did she want to kill him, but she was also determined to prevent a boy in town named Joshua Gardner from marrying Betsy. Kate, later referred to as the Bell Witch, apparently caused John to suffer several choking attacks over the next few years, which he said felt like a sharp stick in his mouth at the time. On December the 20th, 1820, John Bell died after falling into a coma. The family found a vial of poison in the room, and the Bell Witch was allegedly proud to claim responsibility for forcing John to drink. Betsy broke off her engagement to Joshua just 3 months later. And apparently, having finally achieved what she wanted all along, the Bell Witch bid farewell to the family, although she promised to return someday. What are your thoughts on the Bell Witch? This is a very abridged version of the story which I put together tonight. Get in touch, let me know your thoughts. This was a much shorter episode for Halloween, just a short special to whet your appetites for the full episode which should start from Sunday. So please click subscribe and continue to join us on our journey. Now stand firm and hold fast as you head into the darkest night. See you next time.